Welcome to the CPF Radio Hour, underwritten by the Cary Playwrights Forum. I'm your host, Glenn Greggs, and here at the CPF Radio Hour, we feature discussions of theater and current productions with artists from the Triangle area of North Carolina. Whether it's an interview, a discussion, or producing scripts on the air, we broadcast every Tuesday from 9 to 10 p.m. East Coast time on WCOMFM.org or locally on 103.5 FM via WCOMLP Chapel Hill and Carrboro. The following is a recording of a past broadcast, and you can find this and others through WCOMFM.org or CaryPlayrightsForum.org. Please enjoy. Hello and good evening, everyone out there in the world of radio or broadcast streaming, wherever you may be. Welcome to the CPF Radio Hour with Glenn Greggs, and this show is underwritten by the Cary Playwrights Forum. The Cary Playwrights Forum's mission is to help playwrights and aspiring playwrights of Cary and surrounding areas in North Carolina to develop as dramatic writers through educational workshops, regular feedback sessions with playwrights, actors, and directors, and the opportunity to collaborate with allied artists in periodic staged readings or productions of their original work. Their vision is to create an environment where aspiring playwrights can work towards their fullest potential in creating plays that are of value to the world. They offer regular feedback sessions for playwrights, and those meetings are held every third Wednesday night from 7 to 9 p.m. in the second floor conference room at the Cary Arts Center. CaryPlaywrightsForum.org for more information if you are interested. What do we do here on the CPF Radio Hour? We either produce new plays, interview folks about new plays coming up, or talk to other creative theater artists in the area about what is going on in their world and what's going on in on the world of the stage out here. And if you are interested in sending in your works, we are looking for works ideally 15 to 30 minutes in length, but open to other ideas if you have something. Scripts don't need to necessarily be written just for the radio, but an all-silent piece you have, which is a explanation of our solar system, may not go over terribly well on the radio. But to each their own, and I am open to ideas. And yes, if you want to get in touch, all that information is at CaryPlaywrightsForum.org. Last week, we had the cast of Shakespeare come on through the studio, brought to you from Bear Theater. And more information about that show can be found at BearTheater.org/Shakespeare2. That's the number 2. And this week, we have Member of the Wedding by Carson McCullers as presented by Star Pocket Theater. And this production is directed by Brent Wilson. And in studio, we have Mackie Raymond, Ariane Mobesher, and Dr. Joy Bryant as well. We'll have a short excerpt from the piece, and we'll be talking a little bit more with them about the history and some of the background around Member of the Wedding and Carson McCullers' other work. So we're going to let this song play out here. Actually, you know what? I'm going to skip it ahead just because why not? We only have so much time in the world. Let's get things moving. And we will have another song here, and I'll be back at you in just a bit. CPF Radio Hour with Glenn Greggs on WCOMLP, Chapel Hill, and Carrboro.
Watching the 10-year-old shoplifting. 10-year-old watching the
50-year-old. Oh, thank you for that. Thank you for that, Jens Lankman. That's the second week in a row you have graced the airwaves on this show. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I didn't quite realize that having another wedding-themed song would be apropos, but so it is, and so it was played. And that's right, because this week, the script we are talking about is Member of the Wedding by Carson McCullers, who is an author who was born in Georgia originally and has a batch of other works typically set in the South, Southern Gothic I've sometimes heard as describing her style. The Heart is a Lonely Hunter was a book whom, when I brought up the name, my partner was able to go, oh, that book, I've heard of that one by that author. So after reading some of Member of the Wedding, I must say I'm probably going to track down a copy of The Heart is a Lonely Hunter, or steal my wife's copy. We'll see. And this version of Member of the Wedding is going up April 19th, running Thursday through Sunday that weekend and the following weekend at VAE in Raleigh at 309 West Martin Street. And that is being put up by Star Pocket Theater. And as luck and fate would have it, we have some of the members from Star Pocket Theater in the studio with us now, and so I'll be introducing them. And won't that be lovely? So first up, Mackie Raymond, how are you doing this fine evening?
Hi, I'm great. Thank you for asking.
Oh, fantastic. And let me just bring you up your mix a little bit more, and that should be just fine. And then also with us, we have Ariane Mobesher. How are you doing this evening?
I am fantastic. Happy to be here.
Ooh, nice. Ooh, you can get a little closer to that microphone if you don't mind, but yeah.
Here I am.
Ooh, what a nice little rumbly mix you bring to the the voices here. Mine's all high-pitched and scratchy. And so you two here in the studio with us as part of Star Pocket Theater. What are your roles within Star Pocket Theater?
So I am co-founder and managing director, and in The Member of the Wedding, I play Frankie Adams.
Okay, and Frankie Adams is, I believe, one of the main characters within the work.
Uh-huh, one of the main characters.
Yeah. And Ariane, what do you do with Star Pocket?
I am the other co-founder and the artistic director, and with our production, I am also sound designer and assistant director.
Ooh, sound designer and assistant director. Yeah. Oh, no, I feel like I got to be extra on point with my mixing.
That's right.
No excuses for me. So tell me a little bit more about this script, Member of the Wedding. Like, what's the elevator pitch for this script here or this story, if you want to tackle that, Maggie?
Sure. So this is the stage adaptation of Carson McCullough's novel of the same name.
Mm-hmm.
It won the 1950 Critics Circle Award for Best Play. Basically, the plot sort of revolves around Frankie Adams, her family's housekeeper, Bernice Sadie Brown, and her younger cousin, John Henry West,
mm-hmm.
on this really hot weekend in the rural South. Basically, Frankie decides she's going to pick up and run away with her brother and his bride,
mm-hmm.
On the weekend of his wedding. So the whole play is sort of what comes of that decision.
Love
and it's a wild ride.
That's pretty much where I got to when I was reading it. I wanted to get a little sampling of it, and so I read up through Act One, and that was where I got to in the script. So I'm excited to see where it goes from there. And Frankie's a little bit of an odd duck. I think it's fair to say that the script tries to purposely establish her as such, though. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And she's completely aware of it too. And I think that's one of the main conflicts of the show. Bernice, John Henry, and Frankie are all in their own ways social outcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Bernice, because she's black in the 20th century South and faces discrimination because of that.
Okay.
John Henry, because he's an androgynous little boy and loves to wear heels and purses and is, you know, somewhat effeminate. And then Frankie, because she's sort of tomboyish and plays in the dirt and throws knives and steals and causes general mayhem. Yeah. And
she might be an actual criminal.
she might be a criminal.
she makes some pretty aggressive threats in it, which is at least I wasn't expecting the knife throwing scene when I was reading it.
I don't think anyone is.
It kind of caught me off guard, but it was pretty cool, and I like to see it. And what you were saying with all these people being outcasts in one way or another. So my understanding, as you mentioned, the original work was produced in 1950,
mm-hmm.
And Carson McCullough is regarded sort of as a counterculture writer to a degree, or at least as much of counterculture writer as she could have been for the time,
right.
Maybe.
Absolutely.
Just by virtue of a couple of different things, the least of which is writing characters who, as you described, are sort of these outcasts, but then also being a woman writing about the Deep South in the 1940s, mm-hmm. It's not quite typical to expect as much counterculture coming from there. Any other context you can provide about that with her?
Right. Well, a lot of McCullough's work centers on these themes of isolation and loneliness,
mm-hmm.
and sort of self-hatred and self-punishment. And, I mean, a lot of that stems from McCullough's own personal life. She was bisexual, and a lot of her work explores her sexuality,
mm-hmm.
in really interesting ways. I mean, The Member of the Wedding is sort of an exploration of this adolescent girl's sort of blossoming sexuality as she sort of comes to terms with her own queerness.
Mm-hmm.
So that was radical and hardly acknowledged even at the time of its publication. And it's...
Yeah.
A lot of the content still holds up as being sort of countercultural today.
Oh, yeah.
So I think she's a lot of her work was countercultural,
mm-hmm.
but I think it strikes me as always universal, and that's what's
great.
Really what keeps it relevant.
Yeah, there was stuff in the book that I was taken away from. Oh, sorry, were you about to start?
Oh, no, I was just agreeing.
Okay, yeah. I was going to say that I had just the reading, even through just Act One, I was already finding stuff that I was like, oh, that's something I can relate to. Yeah. And this is a 12-year-old girl being written in the 1940s. So, and that's something I'm relating to now in the year 2018. That's more than an 80-year gap. So whatever that universal drumbeat of the Outcast is, unique in its own way amongst all of us, it seems like she was tapping into it. Or at least I got that impression.
Exactly.
And so, Ariane, unless you had something else you wanted to throw in, I think we're going to swap over that microphone to the third member of our group here. Let me put that on mute. Dr. Joyce Bryant, who is reading for Bernice. How are you doing this evening?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. And thank you for having us today. I'm very proud to be a part of this production.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, it seems like a production to be proud of so far, at least what I've heard about it.
Oh, absolutely. The story is very complex, and the relationships are dynamic. And the role that I'm playing, of course, is the black maid of the black cook, maid of the family, Berenice Sadie Adams. And I think it's very important that we tell her story, because it's part of the history of America, part of the history of African Americans. And many times we know that the black maid played a pivotal role in the families where she worked. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's very important. Bernice is, even though she is not, she is a worker, she's also an integral part of the family. And
absolutely,
I think she identifies with Frankie and John Henry as her family. And that's a part of her loneliness, because her family has passed on. She only has one foster brother left, and he's sort of wayward. And so she really identifies with the two, even though she is sort of an authoritative figure.
Sure.
Yes.
She's still trying to nurture and take care and be a part of the family.
Exactly.
And as you said, since some of her own family is now absent, or she has lost most of them except for the one or two relatives that she still has, correct?
Exactly.
Wonderful.
Exactly. All so, right. Yeah, she does have that nurturing role. And, of course, she did play a very pivotal role in Frankie's life, because Frankie's mother died the day that she was born.
Right.
So Bernice stepped in as that mother figure.
Yes, that is some important context there for the character. That's sort of, yeah, being... That's a classic trope of, like, being raised without a mother, to double highlight the sort of non-standard upbringing of a child in certain regard. And
yes,
that's interesting to see that applied here. So I'm delighted to see how it turns out, because we're going to have a short reading from Mackie and Dr. Joyce here. Dr. Joyce Bryant. Sorry, I should get the full name right. My apologies.
Dr. Joy.
I have an aunt named Joyce, which is why it's coming to mind. I apologize.
That's
you're in
okay.
good. You're in good company, though. She's a wonderful woman.
A rose by any name would smell as sweet.
All right, though. Before I stick my foot in my mouth anymore, I'm going to give another song here. Then we'll hop just right back on the air for an excerpt of "Member of the Wedding" by Carson McCullers, as presented by Star Pocket Theater on WCOM LP Chapel Hill and Carborough. Back at you soon. Thank you for that, Lydia Lovelace. And now, CPF Radio Hour is proud to present, from Star Pocket Theater, an excerpt from "The Member of the Wedding" by Carson McCullers.
So, basically what's happening in this scene, just before we begin, Bernice and Frankie are sitting at the kitchen table. Frankie has just chased her cousin John Henry off. And she's sort of caught in her own head about her brother Jarvis and his bride, Janice, who have just visited the house earlier this afternoon.
"Now what makes you act like that? You are too mean to live."
"I know it. Something about John Henry just gets on my nerves these days. Oh, I've got a splinter in my foot."
"That knife ain't the proper thing for a splinter."
"It seems to me that before this summer, I used always to have such a good time. Remember this spring when Evelyn Owen and me used to dress up in costumes and go downtown and shop at the Five and Dime? Oh, and how every Friday night we'd spend the night with each other, either at her house or here? And then Evelyn Owen had to go and move away to Florida, and now she won't even write to me."
"Honey, you are not crying, is you? Don't that hurt you none?"
"It would hurt anybody else except me. And how the wisteria in town was so blue and pretty in April. but somehow it was so pretty it made me sad. And how Evelyn and me put on that show the Glee Club did at the high school auditorium. Sons of toil and danger, will you serve a stranger and bow down to Burgundy?
That was a nice show you children copied in the arbor. You will meet another girlfriend you like as well as Evelyn Owen. Or maybe Mr. Owen will move back into town. Frankie, what you need is a needle.
I don't care anything about my old feet. It was just so queer the way it happened this afternoon. The minute I laid eyes on the pair of them, I had this funny feeling. How old were you, Bernice, when you married your first husband?
I was 13 years old.
What made you get married so young for?
Because I wanted to.
You never loved any of your four husbands but Ludie.
Ludie Maxwell Freeman was my only true husband. The other ones were just craps.
Did you marry with a veil every time?
3 times with a veil.
If only I just knew where he is gone. Psst, psst, psst. Charles! Charles!
Quit worrying yourself about that old alley cat. He's gone off to hunt a friend.
To hunt a friend?
Why, certainly. He roamed off to find himself a lady friend.
Well, why don't he bring his friend home with him? Hey, you ought to know I would be only too glad to have a whole family of cats.
You done seen the last of that old alley cat.
Oh, I ought to notify the police force. They will find Charles.
I wouldn't do that.
I want the police force, please. Police force, I'm notifying you about my cat. Cat! He's lost. He is almost pure Persian.
As Persian as I is.
But with short hair, a lovely color of gray with a little white spot in his throat. He answers to the name of Charles, but if you don't answer to that, he might come if you call Charlena. My name is Miss F. Jasmine Adams, and the address is 124 Grove Street.
Gal, they gonna send her around here and tie you up and drag you off to Milledgeville. Just picture them fat blue police chasing tomcats around alleys and hollering, "Oh, Charles! Oh, come here, mm-hmm. Charlena! Merciful heavens!"
Oh, shut up!
The trouble with you is you don't have no sense of humor no more.
Maybe I'd be better off in jail. I expect Janice and Jarvis are almost to Winter Hill by now.
Sit down. You make me nervous.
Jarvis talked about Granny. He remembers her very good. But when I try to remember Granny, it is like her face is changing. Like a face seen underwater. Jarvis remembers Mother, too, and I don't remember her at all.
Naturally. Your mother died the day that you were born.
Did you hear what Jarvis said?
What?
They were talking about whether to vote for C.P. McDonald. And Jarvis said, "Why, I wouldn't vote for that scoundrel if he was running to be dog catcher." Oh, I never heard anything so witty in my life. And you know what Janice remarked? When Jarvis mentioned about how much I've grown, she said she didn't think I looked so terribly big. She said she got the major portion of her growth before she was 13. She said I was the right height and had acting talent and ought to go to Hollywood. She did, Bernice.
Okay, all right. She did.
She said she thought I was a lovely size and would probably not grow any taller. She said all fashion models and movie stars.
She did not. I heard her from the window. She only remarked that you probably had already got your growth. But she didn't go on and on like that or mention Hollywood.
She said to me.
She said to you, "This is a serious fault with you, Frankie. Somebody just makes a loose remark and then you cozen it in your mind until nobody would recognize it. Your Aunt Pet happened to mention to Clorina that you had sweet manners. And Clorina passed it on to you. For what it is worth, The next thing I know, you were going all around and bragging how Mrs. West thought you had the finest manners in town and ought to go to Hollywood. And I don't know what all you didn't say. And that is a serious fault.
Oh, quit preaching at me.
I ain't preaching. It's the solemn truth, and you know it.
I admit it a little. What I need to know is this. Do you think I made a good impression?
Impression?
Yes.
Well, how would I know?
I mean, how did I act? What did I do?
Why, you didn't do anything to speak of.
Nothing?
No. You just watched the pair of them like they was ghosts. Then when they talked about the wedding, them ears of yours stiffened out the size of cabbage leaves.
They didn't!
They did.
Someday you're going to look down and find that big fat tongue of yours pulled out by the roots and laying there before you on the table!
Quit talking so rude.
I'm so scared I didn't make a good impression.
What of it? I got a date with T.T., and he's supposed to pick me up here. I wish him and Honey would come on. You make me nervous. Come on. Don't act like that.
They were so pretty. They must have such a good time. And they went away and left me.
Sit up. Behave yourself.
They came and went away and left me with this feeling.
Who said? I bet I know something. Frank has got a crush. Frank has got a crush. Frank has got a crush on the wedding.
Quit!
Frank has got a crush. Frank has got a crush.
You better quit.
You lay down that knife.
Make me.
Lay it down, devil. Just throw it. You just.
I used to be the best knife thrower in this town.
Frances Adams, you gonna try that stunt once too often.
I warned you to quit picking with me.
You are not fit to live in a house.
I won't be living in this one much longer. I'm gonna run away from home.
And a good riddance to a big old bag of rubbish.
You wait and see. I'm leaving town.
And where do you think you're going?
I don't know.
You're going crazy. That's where you're going.
No. This coming Sunday, after the wedding, I'm leaving town. And I swear to Jesus, by my two eyes, I'm never coming back here anymore.
Sugar, you serious?
Of course! Do you think I would stand here and say that swear and tell a story? Sometimes, Bernice, I think it takes you longer to realize a fact than it does anybody who ever lived.
But you say you don't know where you're going. You're going, but you don't know where. That don't make no sense to me.
I feel just exactly like somebody has peeled all the skin off me. I wish I had some good cold peach ice cream. But every word I told you was the solemn truth. I'm leaving here after the wedding.
That was an excerpt from Member of the Wedding by Star Pocket Theater, written by Carson McCullers. Now a brief musical break, and we'll be right back. Ooh, thank you for that. The band called Fun While You Wait. Thank you for giving us that song, The Mountain Song. And thank you to the fine performers of Star Pocket Theater. Oh, you two are live now. Yeah, we're all there. Thank you to the fine performers of Star Pocket Theater, Mackie Raymond and Dr. Joy Bryant, who just gave us that excerpt from Member of the Wedding. That was an intense scene there.
Yes. Yeah, I think we probably picked the scene with maybe the most volume changes in the show.
Oh, it's all right. You know, it was a good scene for it. It sets the tension. Sets the clear, sets a nice little hook for anybody listening out there that might want to come for future releases. And so, yeah. And so Star Pocket Theater. Let's find a little bit out about this group here. What's some history about Star Pocket Theater? Because this is the inaugural production. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering what's your backstory?
Sure. So, well, the company is made up of myself, managing director, and Ariane Mobasher, artistic director. Mm-hmm. We're both students at NC State. We're super passionate about theater.
Great.
And so basically around February or March of last year, Brent Wilson, who's a local actor, approached us about this show and approached me about this role. And so we decided to take it on and started working with the text last summer and officially founded the company in July and produced our first event in November, which was Mashallah.
Yeah, so Mashallah was kind of it was our first public appearance as a company, and it was mm-hmm. It was a storytelling event that centered on exploring Middle Eastern identities in America.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and I'm of Persian heritage, and okay. I have a I have a lot of reservations about the ways that people of various Middle Eastern backgrounds and identities throughout the Middle East are perceived in America. And we started the event after City Council candidate Zainab Baloch, one of her campaign signs was vandalized with a racial slur. Mm. And so that kind of got Mackie and I really heated. And as we were planning for the company, we were like, okay, let's start this element of our central mission, which is to create a platform for marginalized realities and groups to kind of share their experiences mm-hmm.
great.
With the community.
I love the mission statement. I mean, yeah. Obviously some not great reasons about right. why such things have to be done, but
yeah.
It is great that folks are picking up that torch and running with it.
Yeah.
And did Mashallah go over well?
Mashallah went really well. We had a turnout of about like 40 to 50 people, and it was just a really great night of storytelling, music performances, some poetry, and tales of personal experience.
Yeah, it was incredibly moving.
I thought it was awesome.
And so that was Star Pocket's first excursion into performance. And then
yes.
This is the next. So this is the first full stage production
right.
where it's one work start to finish. That is a whole. That is one unit, as opposed to a bunch of stories all taking place in one evening. Not that those
right.
are mm-hmm. not that that's any less.
Oh, of course.
Yeah,
of course. Well, that's actually part of our mission is that we want to explore storytelling in all its various forms.
Okay.
You know. So, but when it comes to when it comes to theatrical productions
uh-huh.
with, you know, a plot and a script, you know, we're focused on primarily new works and repurposed classics. We believe that there is definitely strong value in looking to the past to understand how we can better the future and view the present.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've gone on a couple of tangents and rants on this show before yeah. about, like, no, more new scripts or find more works that aren't normally done as I bump my microphone.
Right.
that's usually coming from a point of view of there's enough good stuff out there that if there's no need to keep restaging the same stuff,
mm-hmm.
and, as there is a lot of history that does not get enough spotlight if people want to still do classics and are shy about newer scripts, there's mm-hmm. plenty of classics that you can go to that have much like Member of the Wedding, mm-hmm. that have themes that are relevant to today,
right.
or you can repurpose them in some fashion. And as far as repurposing goes, this script is – your production is pretty close to the original script, though, right? Or is,
yes.
So it's not like a massive – I've seen some repurposings where it's like a massive redux of the original work. So I was just wondering if there was any change of it in that regard, but it doesn't seem like that here.
Well, our repurposing is more in the physical aspect of the staging.
Okay.
So VAE Raleigh, where we're producing the show, is an art gallery.
Okay.
And their current exhibition is called Feminine Spectrum. It's curated by Stacey Kirby, and it is an exploration of the spectrum of feminine identity. And a lot of it is based on a lot of it is inspired by the curator's experience as a queer cis woman.
Sure.
Growing up in the South mm-hmm. and living her experiences in and out of the South, which I, as you've probably noticed, is very, very closely connected to many of the themes throughout Member of the Wedding and Carson McCullough's work.
Right. And
right.
As far as the venue goes, I think that also speaks to our mission. Part of our mission is making theater accessible mm-hmm. to as many people as possible. And I think something that we want to do is bring people into the theater who don't normally attend theater.
Mm-hmm.
And so VAE is primarily a gallery, and they've been a fantastic partner to us.
Mm-hmm.
And we love that it's an unconventional space and that it's contextualized by this exhibition that is so closely related to McCullough's work.
Yeah, it couldn't have been a more perfect fit, honestly.
No, it couldn't.
Wonderful, yeah. And VAE, I feel like I saw something there, but I can't remember what it was. Dang it, sorry about that. I was going to have some relevant comment about it, but I got nothing.
That's fair.
So with VAE, so sorry, not necessarily with VAE, but what other productions do y'all have your eyes set for in the future? Is Star Pocket existing just for getting up this inaugural show, or is there other programs that y'all would like to explore?
Yeah, so we are definitely, you know, Mackie and I have been fortunate enough to have experience as theater artists that is very diverse and experimental, and we definitely plan on, as I mentioned earlier, exploring different kinds of storytelling.
Okay.
But we can't reveal any information specifically about the productions coming up.
Sure.
But we can say that the plan is for our first series / season. It is going to be called It's Not a Phase, which is going to be a series of stories revolving on teen and adolescent angst.
Ah. So, okay. I see the phase. I see where that comes in. Okay.
It's not a phase, Mom.
It's a group of people that folks don't realize teenagers like to see theater too. You just got to make it accessible to them, and not have it be really dense or have it be completely out of their price range.
Exactly,
absolutely.
Especially as young theater artists.
Yeah,
you know, we started our professional careers as theater artists in our late teens, so these are still emotions that are very much in our artistic lexicon.
You know?
Yeah, in our lives currently now.
Certainly.
The angst is real.
It never goes. Trust me, at age 30, doesn't get any easier. let's move into some more funsy stuff here. Okay. So funsy questions. Clean the palate a little bit. Take a little break from talking about the heavy stuff. Is there a movie or album or book that you recently went back to? So you had gone through it before, but then you went back to it recently, and did your opinion of it change by chance?
Do you have any?
I have an answer.
Oh, well, go right ahead.
So, like, as we were as Mackie and I were planning this this first series of teen angst, I revisited My Chemical Romance's The Black Parade.
Ooh. Okay.
And that came out when I was like in early middle school.
All
and
right.
during my own primal angst stages, and I kind of revisiting that in my early 20s, I was like, it took me right back to middle school, like acne and horrible fashion and all. But
like they just started popping up
on your
face again.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Mid-song.
Yeah. but like, yeah, and listening to it again, I just realized it is such a tight, orchestrated album. Like it
aged well.
Then. Yeah, it aged very like a fine wine, my friend.
Wow. My Chemical Romance.
Yeah. it's one of the few albums, or not one of the, it was one of the few mainstream albums that really tells a story.
Sure.
In My Chemical Romance is very theatrical.
Oh, absolutely.
Itself,
yeah.
So that's probably where my love for theater started.
Oh.
Performative things.
It all started from My Chemical Romance?
Everything all starts from My Chemical
there
Romance.
It is. All right. Mackie.
Birthing ground.
Anything yourself, Mackie?
let's see. Well, I mean, for this show, I've sort of, I think, gotten back into the mindset of being an adolescent by revisiting some of my old journals. So
That'll do it.
So I've kept journals my whole life, and so I have an archive of, you know, my middle school, high school thoughts emotions.
Type A.
And so I think that's really helped make Frankie more accessible to me.
Allowing yourself to you're kind of like sifting back through your old keepsakes to tap back into when you were in a similar headspace.
Exactly.
Yeah, I like that. Cool.
Other than that, I guess not revisiting a whole lot lately, but I've been reading Gender Outlaw, which is a book by Kate Bornstein. And she's a fabulous gender theorist and writer, and writes about gender in this really fun and accessible way. And so I really enjoyed that, and I think it's especially helpful and applicable as well to Frankie. She just really reframes a lot of conventional notions of gender and sexuality, and sort of opens up the question of what if we were to do away with these conventions altogether, what kind of world would that Be.
Oh, that's on my mind 24/7. Let me tell you. Did you have something to add too, Dr. Joy? Yeah, let's swivel that microphone. I got you muted right now, so we can swivel that over without causing a fuss, and then go right ahead.
Okay. So, yeah. Well, thank you. I just wanted to say, for me, this experience has not necessarily brought me back to a period of adolescence, but it has reminded me of my roots. Bernice Sadie Adams reminds me of my. Bernice Sadie Brown. But reminds me of my paternal grandmother, who was a domestic worker. And of course, my grandmother, who bore seven children and graduated seven children from college. And, you know, of course, some of them even earned their master's degrees.
That's a pretty good success rate.
It is. And so for me, Berenice reminds me of the roots and how many African Americans started. But then it's also a place where I can take pride in knowing how far we've come and advanced as a people. So it's very personal to me.
Love it. Fantastic.
So it's
to hear that.
I'm just so glad that I was chosen to deliver this role.
Wonderful. I'm so glad to hear the personal connection in there. That's wonderful. All right, then. We're going to go. I got one more funsy question here, and then we're going to take a small break, and then we'll do any last-minute shout-outs that y'all may want to do. This one's a real fun softball one. If you could have any animal as a pet that you've never had before, what would it be? It doesn't even have to be a realistic, like, you know, no, there's no way I could keep that in my place. You know, if you want to say an elephant, you can say an elephant. It's make-believe, like the theater.
Oh, what?
That's my favorite part about theater. You can do anything.
You can do anything.
Oh, it's not
anything.
Fake, Glenn. It's all real.
Well, you know, performance art. It's
fake.
It's a thin line. It's a thin line that we all want. But I'll kick this off, though. I wish I could have, like, a lizard that, like, eats bugs and just kind of, like, hangs out around the apartment. And, like, I just, like, see him out of the corner of my eye and, like, oh, cool, he's keeping me, you know, mosquito or spider free or whatever. And just, like, every now and again, see it just crawling around. It's like, oh, neat. Friendly lizard.
So hands off. That's so sweet.
Yeah. Like, you get to be its environment.
Yeah, yeah. And we just hang around each other.
Yeah.
Nice balance.
Good roommate. I don't know. Like, I'm thinking of, like, all the hybrid animals from Avatar The Last Airbender.
That's a perfect clue. You can just say Appa. You want to just say Appa?
Appa. No, I... Yeah.
Or Appa.
Probably Appa.
All right. If you got another one, if something else comes up, feel free to shout it on out.
Yeah. I mean, a flying bison is just, you know... It's an SUV in the sky.
That's true.
That's my favorite.
Classiest way to fly.
Right.
Mackie?
I'd love, like, some kind of porpoise. Like, I think, like, a dolphin or a beluga, maybe. That would be, like, just something, like, playful and something I could swim with. Like,
something
that
you could swim with.
Yeah.
I like that.
But then also, like, I'd like it to have wings so we could be, you know, mobile and fly around the world. That would be ideal.
So
I think.
A pegadolphin. Yeah. A Pegasus dolphin. Pega porpoise?
Multi-talented.
I think you see where that one's going, but I can't quite land it. Yeah,
oh, I don't see where it's going. So
no, like a Pegasus. Like a Pegasus, it's a horse with wings, and then a porpoise, it's a dolphin. So
yeah.
Like a Pega porpoise, like a
I think we're
on
to something here. Okay.
All right. And then Dr. Joy, do you have another one you want to throw in?
Well, I'm going to have to say that I'm probably the more seasoned members of this cast and crew, so I'm going to have to identify with the wise owl.
Okay.
And actually, you know, our trip over here reminded me of my old days here as a student at UNC Chapel Hill.
Oh.
So many years ago, and my, how things have changed. So, I'm going to have to say the owl.
Love it. with that owl, the owl comment, that will be our last little tidbit for now on the questions. We're going to have another brief musical break, and we'll be right back for a couple of outro comments on CPF Radio Hour with Star Pocket Theater.
Is there a light you have inside?
Down here you see, so
thank you for that, Valerie June, but that will be all for the moment. We will see you on the Astral Plane, that name of that song. But for now, we are going to say our goodbyes to the cast of the Member of the Wedding, or some of the cast at the Member of the Wedding, and some of the support staff from it. And so, Mackie Raymond, who read for Frankie, any other closing remarks or shows you want to give a shout out to?
Sure. So the next project I'll be working on after this production closes is It Should Have Been You at Theater in the Park, and that runs from June 15th to July 1st. I'm playing Rebecca Steinberg in that production, and it's a musical, so very different from this show.
Fantastic. Arion, anything you'd like to give a shout out to?
Yeah. So coming up next, I'll be assistant directing Don't Dress for Dinner at Raleigh Little Theater, which opens and runs in June. And then right after that, I'll be playing Amos Calloway in Big Fish at Theater Raleigh, which runs in July.
Well, fantastic. All right. And then Dr. Joy, anything you want to give a shout out to?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I'd like to say that before I explored the world of acting, I started out as a singer studying voice lessons here. So my next production will be with the Women's Theater Festival. I'll be playing the role of Lizzie in The Goblin Market. And that will be running in Raleigh starting in July.
Fantastic.
Yes, at the Burning Coal Theater. So
wonderful. Yeah, of the shows that I saw in the Women's Theater Festival bill for this season, that one in particular caught my eye. So I'm looking forward to checking that out. I hope I'm able to.
Oh, well, thank you. I hope to see you there then.
Absolutely. All right, then. And last but not least, a final bit of detail for Star Pocket Theater and the production of The Member of the Wedding. This is opening up on Thursday, April 19th, and running through that Sunday, and then also the following weekend, Thursday through Sunday, and it's happening at VAE in Raleigh at 309 West Martin Street. And Ariane, what again is the website for tickets?
It is the Member of the Wedding, one word, thememberofthewedding.brownpapertickets.com.
And that has all the ticketing information for anybody who is so inclined. Mm-hmm. And also, I believe you have a Facebook presence as well, Star Pocket Theater and The Member of the Wedding, and you can stumble into it from there if you know those nuggets of info. All right, then. Well, thank you again, cast. And I would love to sit here and chat all night, but unfortunately, our time is up. Thank you for listening, everybody out there. And as always, keep your eyes open and your ears open and watch out for yourselves and take care of each other. Kisses. I'll wait for you on the other side. Thanks again for listening to the CPF Radio Hour with your host, Glenn Greggs. Our live broadcasts take place on Tuesday nights from 9 to 10 p.m. East Coast time on WCOMFM.org or locally in Chapel Hill and Carborough on 103.5 FM. We are underwritten by the Cary Playwrights Forum, who seek to bring opportunities to aspiring playwrights in the Triangle area of North Carolina. We broadcast on WCOMLP Chapel Hill and Carborough, and you can find other past recordings on WCOMFM.org or CaryPlaywrightsForum.org. Music is attributed to Dr. Turtle through Creative Commons license. As always, keep your eyes up, ears open, take care of yourselves, and watch out for each other. Kisses!